Welcome to the latest podcast episode from Future Medicine AI Hub. I'm Jade Parker, one of the editors here. Today I'm going to be speaking with Tina Marshall, who is Head of Commercial at Icrivia Health. So Tina works to help advance drug development into mental health and also dementia through AI-driven natural language processing real-world data. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tina. Could you start off by briefly introducing yourself and a brief overview of your career to date?
Hi, my name is Tina Marshall and I'm Head of Commercial at Icrivia Health. So my career to date is I've worked in med tech for about 20 years now, which kind of like was completely left field because I actually trained as a dancer when I was much younger. But then that didn't happen due to a knee injury, so I started working in a med tech company, Becton Dickinson, so one of the large global medical device players. It was really good there. Actually, that was where I kind of like cut my teeth and really fell in love with working in the medical sector. And then from there, I launched some products and managed some of their portfolio. And then I moved over to a company called KCI Medical, which is now part of 3M. Again, working in marketing, actually, and helping with some of the portfolio there around wound care. And then I went to a company called ICNet, which was my first SaaS organization. So they're now part of Baxter. So the focus there was on infection prevention software. Then I had children, and so then I wasn't able to work the hours that I wanted to work to be able to look after the children. So I wanted to go home for bath time, and the job wouldn't allow that, so we parted ways. And so then I started my own business, actually, and did that for a number of years. And one of my clients asked me if I would go back and become an employee for their company, and I did so. So again, that was in digital health, and really enjoyed that work. And then I moved on to Icrivia, where I've just completely fallen in love with the mission and everything that we do.
So I'm also a mum as well. How do you find the balance between now? Do you feel it's kind of moved forward in terms of work-life balance and companies being more on board with being balanced?
That's a really interesting question and a really good question. So actually the reason I started my own business back when I did was because I was looking for a role at a senior level, and all of the recruiters would tell me that I wouldn't be able to be home for bath time. So that's not even really working less than part-time, that's just I want to be home for bath time. And everybody said that I wouldn't be able to do it. So I kind of like have the opinion, well, you can't tell me what to do, so I'll start my own business. And do it that way. Then I think I've had the good fortune, but also it's been my choice that I'll only work for companies that have kind of like a family-friendly outlook. We certainly have that at Icrivia. So, you know, I will still take my boys to school. You know, they'll go to after-school club because obviously, you know, I'm working full-time. But they're not there every single day, and then I'll still take them to their street dance classes and that type of thing. So we're a very family-friendly organisation, and actually lots of the management team have really small children, so I think it's a bit harder for them, yeah. You know, when your children are so small. How old are yours?
My little boy is 3.5, so yeah, we're in, I thought terrible twos would stop at 2, but he's just got like stronger and cleverer and faster.
And boys are so energetic. You have to have so much energy to keep up with them, but they're so incredibly loving. Yeah, so for me, I'm very lucky with where I am and what I do because I love my job and my family comes first. So to me, family always comes first.
So I think linking into that, what sort of challenges are there for being a woman working in the tech industry?
Good question. So I actually think that there are still challenges for women working in most industries. I don't think it's just related to tech. You know, we still have a gender pay gap, which is incredibly frustrating. We're still not bringing enough women into tech, actually. So even for some of the roles that we have, we're just not seeing the candidates come. We're just not seeing the female candidates come through. And I think that that actually boils down to where we start working with young people to tell them about career opportunities that they have available. You know, it's really ridiculous. I've been seeing some posts on kind of like local community groups where a young person didn't get the right GCSE grades to do a particular course at college, and the girls were automatically put into childcare. Yeah, that's horrendous. To happen in this day and age, that's absolutely horrendous. So I think that we still have a lot of issues. That's not just tech, I think it's everything. And we need to start early. We need to start early and give girls the opportunity and the knowledge of what's possible for them to do.
And then what advice would you give to women looking to pursue a career in the tech field?
A very simple piece of advice, which would be just go for it. Genuinely, there is nothing stopping you. You will find nowadays lots of companies that are family friendly, but of course we have to recognise again that not all women want to have children, you know, and sometimes there is that stigma that follows women around as well that I think can affect women in their 30s when an employer will look at them and think, well, you're of childbearing age, so should I hire you or should I not hire you? And it's an awful thing that I think women have to face, but you just have to just go for it and recognise that where you are may not be the right place for you, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to find the right place.
Thank you. And then looking more into AI, how is AI helping to advance drug development for, say, mental health and dementia?
So we have at Acrivia Health, it's called Acrivia Synapse, which is an AI-driven natural language processing data enrichment solution. And again, I'm in love with it, it's amazing. And what that does, so typically you'll find that in the clinical notes from healthcare organisations, 80% of it is unstructured free text. So there's very, very little coded data. And I'm talking like even medication and diagnosis are not coded. And then also you don't want to diagnose a patient too soon, because you want to, you know, it's so subjective, mental health and dementias. You know, there's not a genetic test that you can do to get a diagnosis for schizophrenia or bipolar. And these categories are so incredibly broad. They're simply not the treatment for patients to be able to have. So, you know, for clinicians working on the front line, they can't offer a solution to patients. All they can do is just offer them something that can help them with some of their symptoms, but know that it's not going to cure and know that it's not going to modify the disease in any large way. What we're able to do with the AI-driven NLP is to pull out all of the information that's been held in free text. We can pull that out and add context and classification to that data. And what that then allows you to do is it allows you to understand the patient characteristics, the disease burden, the disease characteristics, everything that you need to be able to have to understand the trajectory of what's happening to the patient. We're able to pull that out, you know, so essentially we make sense of data that nobody's been able to make sense of before, and we have incredibly high F1 scores for accuracy for doing this, and we build these models. So we have about 400 symptoms where you're able to see what's going on with the cohort of patients. So then the goal is really that we can absolutely help to sub-categorize and develop subtypes for bipolar, schizophrenia, you know, depression, because it's such a mental health and dementia has been an under-invested area, which is really sad because it touches everybody in their lives in different ways, and also there are so many comorbidities associated with that. So, you know, if you have a long-term condition that's kept you off work for a long time, the likelihood is that at some point you will feel depressed and that you'll need to go through treatment for depression. You know, addictions can develop from prescription medication. So what we're able to do, as I say, like with the AI, is really to pull out this really rich, deep, longitudinal data that will then allow everybody at this conference, all of the drug developers, to really truly understand what's happening with patients and the disease. So then we can move more to precision medicine and develop targeted therapies to deal with these conditions.
And do you think AI could help overcome some of the stigma around mental health?
Absolutely. I absolutely do think AI can help overcome the stigma of mental health, because I think that what it's allowing us to do is generate awareness. And as I say, this huge pool of data that has never been seen before. And a huge problem that we have, I think, as people in our population, is awareness of mental health and dementia, you know, and I think that we can put labels on things too quickly without understanding truly what's going on. You know, we could do a diagnosis that could be incorrect because we don't have sufficient information, and that's not anybody's fault, because everybody's doing the best they can based on the information that they can get. but you can't see what's going on in the diseased brain. The AI allows you to do that. So if you have the deepest level of phenotypic data you can get, and then one of our projects is a precision neuroscience initiative collecting genetic data. So if you're able to really marry those two so that you can have, as I say, the deepest view of the diseased brain, then you know what you're dealing with. And AI is absolutely supporting the ability to do that.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Because I think in terms of mental health, considering how far our knowledge has gone in terms of medicine, it's still such an area. There's so much mystery around, and we know there are mental health conditions, but to try and classify them and try and quantify yes, no, and then which route you can go down for treatment is so tricky.
It's incredibly difficult. What we've been able to do with Acrivia Synapse is you can actually see the trajectory for the patient. So you can see what medication they've been on, for what time point, and what signs and symptoms they had with that. Had they had any adverse reactions to that medication, you know, positive reactions to that medication? What signs and symptoms are they displaying? Because generally, these patients, you know, there's no quick fix at all. It's a long time that these patients are in care for. And just being able to see exactly what's happening to them is incredibly powerful, and I think will really make a difference to people being able to invest in this area for what is traditionally known as a difficult to recruit population for clinical trials.
It also gives more power to the patient, I think, because, I mean, going through any sort of treatment, particularly like we're based in the UK, so the NHS, trying to get any sort of treatment through the NHS can cause a lot of stress. So to be able to have more control and have it's quite clear that treatment has given me this effect versus that effect, giving more power to the patient and giving a bit more of a voice to.
Absolutely. So we don't, as Acrivia, we don't share that information with the patient. That's confidential, GDPR compliant, and of course the data, any data that we work with is de-identified and anonymized. But absolutely, it provides the ability for clinicians to be able to do more. But one thing I will say, that we are very blessed for with the NHS, which, you know, I love the NHS, but we all know it's under a huge amount of pressure. But where it is powerful for us as a country, where we can absolutely stand up these things, is that we have our NHS number, our unique identifier. So the unique identifier, cradle to grave. So that means that you have a longitudinal view of what's happening to a cohort of patients. And it's the longitudinal view of understanding those signs and symptoms, because we don't want to diagnose too early. You know, and because we need to look at therapies that can get to the patient before they're right at the end of their life, you know, essentially. So again, that's what you can do with the AI.
What concept is most exciting to you in the field of medical AI?
So for me, it's actually, I touched on it earlier, the work that we're doing around precision medicine, I think, is incredibly exciting. You know, if you look, there are over 200 different types of cancer. We all know nobody ever wants to get cancer. We all know that 50% of us will get cancer at some point. And then there's a lot of investment in that area, which is great, definitely not knocking it. If you look at bipolar, there are four different types of bipolar, and one of those types are for symptoms that just don't fit into the other three buckets. So how on earth can a patient receive treatment to help them, because you're not you don't know what you're really targeting, and so for me, this is where precision medicine can actually come to the forefront, and this is where AI can help, because we can subtype these awful diseases that impact not only the patient that has them, but all of their families and friends around them, you know. And then we look at trauma. They say that trauma goes down through seven generations. Okay, so that's seven generations of people in our population that are affected by one person and the experience that they've had because of a mental illness. And that's the sort of thing that I think, A, we need to raise awareness for mental illnesses so that we can be more understanding and empathetic, but B, have that focus so that we can develop targeted treatments for them, so that you don't have a clinician that is trying to help a patient as much as possible but then doesn't have a cure or a solution, you know. And then when a patient says to them, is this it, is this my life, they say, actually no, this is what we can offer you and this is where we can move on. So for me, it's definitely precision medicine for mental health, I think, is so cool.
And then last question, so if you had unlimited funding, what would you like to work on?
Oh dear, I would absolutely accelerate. You know I'm going to say it. I would absolutely accelerate the precision medicine. I would get all of the big pharma to focus on it because they can do some really cool things. But just to accelerate that, COVID was awful. Absolutely it was. One of the things it did do is it raised awareness of mental health and dementias. But also, due to COVID, it also caused, you know, more addictions that people are facing and that people are dealing with. So if we can accelerate, if we had unlimited funds and as kind of like a life sciences ecosystem, we can accelerate, focus into that, then happy days.
Thank you so much, Tina, for speaking with us. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to this episode. If you would like to find out more about how AI is revolutionizing healthcare, make sure to head to fmaihub.com and also check out all of our social media handles and our other podcast episodes. Thank you so much.